नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स बुद्धं धम्मं संघं नमस्सामि। I thought I'd say a little about skillful listening, mindful listening, especially to the Dhamma. So we come to listen to somebody reflect, and essentially this needs to be with an open mind. So skillful listening is to listen to what somebody has to say and to look at our own experience, compare that with our own experience. Hopefully we come back to that person with questions if we have any. But the attitude should be one of picking up what we find useful and leaving aside what we don't find useful after reflection. And this can be different after reflection, I say, that gives that emphasis, because I know for myself that over the years some of the things that I've rejected at the beginning actually turned out to be the most useful for me, so on reflection. So this can be one of the good use of recorded talks, is that you can listen more than once, so you get past your initial reactions. You just listen to the content, you get an idea of what's being said, and then you have another go, and you see you listen a bit more deeply. Either that, or you see how this way this is set up in monasteries, is that talks are given in very particular way, in particular occasions. So a Dhamma is something that's raised up, the person giving the talk gives it from a higher seat, and after the meditation. So this is good reason for this. So the idea is that you can calm your mind and open your mind with the meditation in preparation for listening with an open mind to what's being said, and a less reactive mind, a mind that responds rather than simply reacts. A mind that can take things in, it's receptive. It's emptied out a bit of space. You know, in meditation, you've made a bit of space in your mind for something new to come along. And then, in terms of Dhamma, people have different characters, and so one man's meat is another man's poison, as they say. Some people really like one teacher and not like another, and another person's completely different, and this is absolutely fine. So often one teaching will suit your particular tendencies and another teaching won't. So a teaching that suits you will show you perhaps what you need to pay attention to. But sometimes not. Sometimes we can be a bit blind to our own, what we need to hear. It's very difficult to hear. So this is where contact with the teacher is very helpful, because sometimes they can address somebody directly. They can address you directly, tell you what they think you need to know, rather than you're having to listen to a talk, and then you think, well, does that really apply to me? I'm not really sure. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. And then not to take anyone as an authority. Obviously, if somebody has a very big reputation, they've been practicing a very long time, they're well known, published and all the rest, and you can be sure that there are other people who think this person's a good teacher, so they're worth a try. You listen to them with more faith, perhaps, than somebody who's just starting out. And certainly in the Theravada teaching, this is true, that a lot of weight is given to how long somebody has been practicing, because what seems useful at the beginning in terms of practice, you can get it's called beginner's mind, a common phenomenon where you seem to be doing very well at the beginning, in certain one way or another. But what's useful at the beginning is not necessarily what we realise is useful many years down the line. So qualities that arise, fruits of the practice that arise, are very subtle, and we can miss the value of them. Don't seem like anything at all. Mindfulness, for example, presence of mind, can be a very subtle sense of that at the beginning. Brightness of mind can seem like nothing at all. How could we find a refuge in that? How could that become so important? But it can, over years of practice. So somebody who's been practicing a long time can tell you this, or never mind these initial insights, you see deeper later. This is very often the case. We hold ourselves up by hanging on to what we realise in the early years. Not to say it's not significant, it can be in some ways, but we just don't realise at the beginning how deep the practice can go, perhaps, how profound it can be, how deeply it can affect us. We may change our reasons for listening as we go on. So we may go back over things that we listened to years ago. We may be a different person, we may be listening for different things or different qualities. So I advise not to write off a certain teacher. But you see that different teachers certainly have different styles and different strengths, so they're right to talk from their strength, and an amount of artistic license is required here. So, a monk can just talk from his own experience. This is what's encouraged in the forest tradition, to talk from your own experience and to talk from your strengths. I encourage as Buddhists generally to make much of our strengths and little of our problems or weaknesses. So if someone's talking and you might feel that they're conceited, then you reflect on that the Buddha is encouraging us to be positive about ourselves. This is a good thing to be. Be able to listen to all kinds of people at the City of 10,000 Buddhas in San Francisco, then they have children of 4 and 5 years old giving Dhamma talks. From that young, as everybody, when a little child like that gets up and speaks to the whole group, then the whole group is bending over backwards to encourage them. Yeah. They get them off to a good start. They're very forgiving what they're saying. Well, a lot of us are, and if we've just started to practice, it's like that. We're still babies, really. I would say I'm kind of a monastic teenager. I'm a kind of rebellious adolescent at this point. Feel about 16 years, kind of getting to my rebellious adolescent years. Yeah, so you kind of listen with that kind of, in that kind of context. See, well, this man's had some depth of some years of practice. He's practiced as a layman for a number of years quite a number of years, and then as a monastic and studied this and that, so yes, maybe know something. We never know. We have to listen with an open mind. Certainly, the ability, what somebody knows and what they can teach are two different things. So somebody can be a very good speaker, and underlying that can be little knowledge or little experience, Dhamma. If somebody could not be such a good speaker, and yet there's a lot under there. If some people make a lot out of a little, or a little out of a lot. So it's going to be a bit of an art, isn't it, to get the most out of a talk. But to be positive about it, to find something good about it, is a good skill. And to think of something good about it, whatever, however it is, on that side, and being overly critical or completely critical of something, to be in line with the teachings, to be listening for the good points. And trying to remember. And it's often good if the speaker speaks from a more general point of view, unless he knows the people he's talking to. And particularly, you should be wary of any teacher who says that theirs is the only way. Whoever they're talking to, they'll just say, well, my way is the only way. I'm right and everybody else is wrong. Alumpo Smedo said this to me earlier in my monastic life. I was very grateful for this. You know, beware of any teacher who says, I am the only way and my way is the only way. And yet it can come across like that. I mean, if a teacher's out to inspire, then they're out to push their point to some degree. You think that a teacher, especially in Asia, they're out to inspire. They're not saying, well, I think this, but I might be wrong, I'm not really sure. You don't say that if you're out to inspire, give people confidence. So there is an emphasis of responsibility on the listener to understand this and to listen in a good way. Listen with a sense of respect for somebody who's trying to help. And I remember when a very senior monk came to Melbourne, a Thai senior monk, and most of the people there were monks. And he gave a very strong talk about when he was a young monk, how he would mix concrete all day and sit meditation all night, and just how tough it was in just about every way. And it was quite a talk, actually, very powerful, and yet hard to take in. You know, big man, very big man. Hard for me to take in, anyway. Think, oh gosh, you know, I could never have done that. You know, if I'd been at that monastery, I'd never have survived. So it's hard for me to accept it in a way. And yet, right at the end of his talk, it was a very rousing talk. Right at the end of the talk, there's a complete change of mood, and he just sat back in his chair and very big smile at all of us. And he just said, well, I hope that something, but very, very gently said, but I hope that something that I've said is of some use to anybody here, somebody here. But at the end of the day, it's all up to us, isn't it? Up to the individual. And you can feel the kind of sense of relief in the room at that point. The kind of building tension through his talk, and then his relief. In a way, that pressure is also good, though, isn't it? Now that we feel a bit of pressure from a speaker. Not too gentle or too qualifying everything they have to say. So then we get a bit of a push or something. It can be good. certainly the style in Thailand. I mean, the teachers are very powerful and uncompromising, and they speak very strongly. So I always have to watch myself when I get back from Thailand if I give a talk. Come over a bit too strong, to say the least. The people there have a lot of faith, and they know how to listen. I know that, one time at Ajahn Anand's monastery, the Ajahn gave a very powerful talk to the monks, not talking while they were washing their bowls. And he went on to wash our bowls, and the monks were chatting away as usual. And I thought I'd misunderstood the Thai and approached one of the monks there and asked him, "Well, didn't the Ajahn say that we shouldn't chat away while we're washing our bowls?" And he just said, "Well, yes, but we're not sheep." It's like that. We're not sheep. I found that lovely, actually, because I mean, they couldn't respect the Ajahn any more than they do. No way. I mean, they really totally. And yet they don't feel that they have to do what he says all the time. Respect and authority are not always the same thing. So it's not hypocrisy or rebellion. This is a refined culture where respect and authority don't necessarily go together. One can respect somebody very highly and yet still see fit not to follow everything they say necessarily. That's always the advice. If somebody's giving advice or instruction, then don't feel you have to follow it, and feel that you can be open with the teacher about the fact that you're not following it. It may be that you won't grow so close to that teacher. That teacher may feel that you're not so open to their teaching. But it's good to be honest. Falling into trying to please the person that we see is apparently in authority. So we can be too respectful as well when it comes to relating to teachers. We're not respectful enough in that we may not listen or just contradict rather than question. But we can be too respectful as well. So offer this for your reflection.